Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namasami. Okay, so this evening is the full moon night of March, and also coincides with Saturday night, so that we have the both the moon night vigil and the taking of the refuges and precepts. For those who are interested, taking on the precepts for the lunar observance nights, it's an opportunity to experiment with what are called renunciate precepts, especially in a monastery setting, monastic setting. Opportunity to see, getting a feeling for renunciation and simplicity, as these are kind of a flavor of the monastic practice, and but it doesn't require living a monastic lifestyle, but it to experiment with those things that help to support renunciation and simplicity, which are kind of commodities that are in short supply in a consumer society. That's a different flavor. So we're starting to move toward the after this evening, then it'll be 2 weeks until the end of our winter retreat. Having 2 weeks remaining, just encourage people to both the resident community, the retreat crew, other people that are plugging in to the retreat, is using the this last period of time for as skillfully as possible, and making it useful. I don't know about anybody else, but certainly for myself, I tend to like to build up a kind of momentum. It takes time for me to build up a momentum of a practice, and so to be able to keep that momentum going, and then utilizing the force of that momentum to help the, especially at this as we're winding down the latter part of the retreat, not letting it not letting that momentum dissipate or get scattered, which can easily happen, especially as it's one can feel the energy of spring coming, the leaves coming out, the warm weather. I haven't been able to get out and walk on the trails, but I hear rumors of wildflowers around. Just to put it in kind of perspective and balance, I looked at on CBC today and looked at the weather to see what it was like in the town that I grew up in. It's minus 27 today, so. So they're not having to worry about spring yet. That's a different feeling. So we can have create another perception. Okay, yeah, this spring's not coming for a while yet, so we'll just keep in retreat and keep our focus. Of course, we've had a lot of time for meditation and walking meditation, sitting meditation. There's been regular readings pretty much daily from the Thai forest tradition. So there's been a lot of varied voices, flavors, but I think one of the underlying themes is certainly a consistency of putting forth of effort and making the practice practical, making it real, not making it theoretical or something that is distant from our own bodies and minds. And that's a recognizing that all we have and all we need to practice the Buddhist path is this body and this mind. It's not about something else, some other place, some other time. We have everything we need. Of course, that's not the feeling, and it's interesting to pay attention to that. The feeling is always, I don't have enough, it's not the right time, circumstances aren't quite right yet, I'm not good enough, or there's all these things of that feeling of not enough. And of course that's the fundamental program of desire that keeps leading us to suffering. We build up the logical justifications because the reality is, of course, that we do need to develop wholesome qualities. We do need to cultivate the skillful, but when it's from the perception of, I don't have enough. I'm somehow incomplete, and I will find completion elsewhere, in time and place. Then we keep moving, And then how the Buddha characterized that movement is tanha, and the literal word for tanha, usually it's translated as desire, but maybe a more accurate translation would be thirst. So that there's this kind of unquenchable thirst that it's always looking to be quenched. It's always looking to consume somehow, trying to get something. So that and it's expressed in the desire for sensuality, sensual contact, sensual stimulation, sensual gratification, or the desire for being, becoming, in the sense of from a perception of self, a perception of me needing to be, become, to get, to achieve, to realize. But then it's opposite, of course, which is the way the mind, when it comes from that thirst and desire, then the opposite is, which is, it's kind of hand in hand, is that desire for non-becoming, the pushing away, the rejection, the fear, the aversion, that not wanting, shouldn't be this way, I don't like this, can't deal with it. And it's just, that's the way the mind swings and moves. So that's that fundamental movement of desire. So that learning how to pay attention to becoming still, finding an anchor of stillness within oneself. And that's why we develop the different meditations. There really is a gazillion different techniques and methods. But fundamentally what the Buddha says, take an object and sustain attention and awareness on it, picking up an object in order to say like the breath, and just taking the breath, the sensation of the breath coming in and out of the body, either the whole feeling within the body, a particular point. At the abdomen, at the tip of the nose. So then we take that object of attention and develop a continuity of awareness, a continuity of mindfulness. And as that continuity of attention begins to develop, and you be more comfortable with that being present with it, there starts to be that movement of mind that goes out is able to be present with that meditation object. So then, as we can be comfortable and present and content with our, which are usually unfamiliar emotions, just being content, being present, then you start recognizing that within that there is a stillness, and learning how to be, again, moving into that stillness. It doesn't have to move, it doesn't have to be gratified, it didn't have to be stimulated, it didn't have to become, it didn't have to push away anything. It can just be present. So that learning how to be present. In our lives we've learned all sorts of things, different skills, different knowledge, occupations, education. But again, that's usually moving out. So learning how to come back and be present within. You know, and there are, you know, all sorts of different, different techniques, different methods, and taking an interest in the what is it that feels interesting to one? What is it that feels comfortable? It's like, I said, mindfulness of breathing is. Common. The walking meditation, paying attention to the body, loving kindness, discursive contemplations, like just recollections of the refuges, qualities of the Buddha, recollections of the nature of the body, whether it's the elements, whether it's the constituent parts. I mean, there's lots to pay attention to if one wants to choose. But it's sort of like seeing what's the mind interested in, what helps it to settle. What feels comfortable. So one has to pay attention to that. And then, you know, you have to, because we're going against the grain, going against the stream of our habits and what we're familiar with, you can't be making the mind too uncomfortable. There's a discourse where the Buddha compares a practitioner to. He gives the example of a cook who's employed by either the king or the king's minister. Yeah, and there's a competent cook and an incompetent cook. So that the incompetent cook just sort of makes a bunch of food and sets it out for his employer, walks back to the kitchen, starts, you know, whatever, cleaning up the kitchen, and doesn't pay attention to what the king or the king's minister eats. What is he partial to? What's he actually satisfied with? And then the Buddha says, he doesn't get a raise. He doesn't get a gift. In the end, he probably doesn't even end up in the with employment. But the competent cook prepares the food, sets it out, and pays attention to what the king or the king's minister what kind of flavors does he like? What's he interested in? And what's satisfying to him? And then he goes back and makes, you know, some more dishes around that kind of a theme. And then, of course, the king enjoys his food and his meal. And he ends up getting gifts, getting a raise, staying in having that employment for a long time. So, and the Buddha compares it to us as meditators, as practitioners, you know, we have to pay attention to what the mind is interested in, what it finds comfortable, and then we have to, you know, you don't want to be, you know, there's obviously what it likes and what it prefers, but it's also what's actually good for, and, you know, in the same way that, I think you say that, I'm just sort of thinking, well, as the king's cook doesn't just sort of bring out a plate of donuts every time, every day. Maybe so the king might like it, but it's not really good for anybody. And probably gets bored of it pretty quick. Similar for us, you know, we want to be, what's actually comfortable, what's interesting, but also what's helpful, what's actually brings a sense of well-being to the mind in terms of our meditation. So tuning into that. Now that discourse is in particular, it's in the Satipatthana Samyutta. So what the Buddha said, you know, you've got all the different sort of ways that the Buddha has explained practices around mindfulness of the body, but there's also mindfulness of feelings, mindfulness of the mind, mindfulness of the dhammas in different ways. So there's a whole large range of practices that we can be choosing from, but learning how to pay attention to what helps the mind to become more settled, to feel comfortable, and in particular, what helps to support that quality of stillness. So on a certain level, you know, we don't have to worry too much about the content of the mind. Because, you know, the way that how we tend to relate in the sense of there's an assumption somehow that, you know, if we were really good meditators, really good Buddhist practitioners, we would just have good thoughts and we wouldn't have bad thoughts, you know, as a general sort of characteristic. And we get kind of obsessed with the content of the mind and trying to make it, you know, trying to have good thoughts, trying to have wholesome thoughts, trying to have wise thoughts, trying to have these. And it's not really so much about the content of the mind, but how we hold it. So that, again, that sense of holding it within a sphere of stillness and awareness. Then you can, you know, it doesn't really matter what arises in the mind. And a lot of strange, conflicting thoughts can come up in the mind, feelings, emotions. And, you know, that's okay. That's what minds do. They crank out moods and thoughts and feelings. And if we're constantly trying to control them, force them to fit into some idea of how we would like an ordered, peaceful, wise mind to be, I mean, it's actually another desire for being and becoming. So that not getting too worried about the content of the mind, but learning how to step back and how do we hold it. So the container of awareness, a container of stillness, a perspective of a spaciousness that we can hold whatever arises and allow it to cease without being shaken, without being proliferating, without creating another story around it, which is generated from that not enough, not good enough, not right enough. Because oftentimes we're trying to when we meditate or practice, we're trying to get certain states of mind, and there's a kind of a measuring. I mean, it's a way that, again, it's sort of the way the mind works, the way we're conditioned. We're measuring what we're experiencing and trying to see, am I measuring up? Am I getting this right? We're sort of looking for the kind of the wow factor. Wow, did I have a good meditation? Did I really understand this? Is my practice going good? And at that, that kind of quest for the wow factor is really disappointing, actually, because that's what keeps us going up and down. Whereas the quality of being present, quality of stillness, quality of renunciation. And again, sort of come back to the flavor of our practice tends to be informed by this element of renunciation, which isn't a doing without or being hard done by anything. It's being able to step into a simplicity of not being caught up with the wanting movement, coming back to stillness. And there's a deep satisfaction there. There's a deep yearning, really, for the heart to experience. So exploring that, investigating that. What is it that keeps the mind moving? What is it that keeps the mind reacting? What is it that keeps the mind shaken? And it doesn't take much, really. Just any little thing that we're either disappointed in or irritated by or attracted to, and we're shaken again. And this is one of the words that the Buddha describes. Yeah, the goal is an unshakable deliverance of mind, and so that unshakable quality, and it isn't by forcing something to be not moving, forcing things to not have to deal with anything, but it's being able to be present and to see clearly. And I think one of the ways of training with this or practicing with this is not just in meditation, but how we receive the experience of the world around us, how we engage with the world around us, something that is oftentimes just taught for practice, living in the world, the eight worldly dhammas, and saying, oh, the world revolving around these eight qualities, which are four opposites, so praise and blame, gain and loss, or success and failure. I mean, those are sort of similar. It's a gain, loss, success, failure, the sense of fame, disrepute, or honor, insignificance, pleasure, pain, happiness, suffering. So that those four kind of opposites. This is, you know, what we experience in the world is that they're called worldly dhammas, and as long as we're sort of moving back and forth between trying to get one, shrinking away from the other, then we're entangled in the world. But it's not, when we say the world, it isn't sort of out in the external world. That's how we relate internally towards ourselves, toward our meditation. There's the commentary going on internally, the praise and blame about our own, our actions, how was the last meditation? We're sort of, you know, the praise and blame, a tendency, success and failure, gain loss sort of thing. Oh, gaining this state of mind, losing it, losing a continuity of peacefulness, and then we react and go up and down with disappointment or elation accordingly, but it's still hooked by worldly dhammas. So to reflecting on those the ways that it that affects us, and again it's both in terms of our actions and engagement with the world around us, duties, responsibilities, social obligations. But it's also the internal aspect of our own inner spiritual practice. So that paying attention to those things that keep us entangled in the world. And it's not something that, you know, you try to push away every little aspect of the characteristics of the world, in the sense of try not to experience any kind of praise or blame, any kind of happiness or suffering. This is part of all experience. And learning how to experience it without getting shaken. And to a certain degree, I mean, it's like trees that have experienced the wind blowing, heavy winds, or some storms. As they experience that, when they're from the time they're small and grow, they start putting down deeper roots, and so that they're more stable, more solid. If they've never put down the roots, then the next storm that comes up, then they fall over. So that it's not a bad thing. It's part of nature. So learning how to take those, because those worldly dhammas are also called worldly winds. So taking those experiences, and rather than resisting or having aversion or fear or or chasing after them, then bringing it back so that how do I put down deeper roots so that I'm not shaken? And you know, that, then it becomes an object of investigation and an internalizing, so that we're cultivating and developing a stability in the practice. And it's not through getting what we want and making things not change in any way or be exactly how we prefer or want or conceive, but it's sort of we have the resources and the presence of mind to recognize that this is ordinary, because in the sense that there's always going to be even the Buddha was criticized. He was praised, but he was criticized. There was times when it was where he wasn't recognized. He wasn't given honor. He was given insignificance, or not recognized. That's ordinary. And there's always an element of happiness and suffering, or pleasure and pain. They can switch so quickly. Whether it's just physical or change of weather. I mean, it's all of a sudden something's different, and it feels different. But it's not something to be, to like shrinking back from the more unwanted elements, say like the mind sort of prefers the praise, the fame, the gain, the pleasure, and it doesn't want to have to deal with the blame, the loss, the disrepute, the pain, the suffering. But there, that kind of moving towards and shrinking back from things is generated by desire and a kind of a delusion that somehow they're separate. So that they're being, again, how do we hold it? In the sense of what kind of container do we experience it from? So that container of awareness and attention that isn't just swept up in the reactions. I'm just thinking of that old teaching story of the the farmer whose horse runs away, and then oh dear, I've only got one horse, and it's all everything. It's all life is falling apart, and what am I going to do now? And then sometime later, the horse comes back, but it's because it's found a mate somehow, and it comes. All elated now. I thought I lost my one horse. Now I got two, and so there's all happy, and then they sort of, well, you need to tame this horse and be able to make it work, and then the son is trying to train this horse, and he falls off the horse, breaks his leg, and says, "Oh God, this is terrible. How am I? What are we going to do?" And then this is awful. And then the king comes through, looking to conscript young people into the army to go off and fight. And he said, "Oh, great! My son broke his leg. He doesn't have to go." So it's sort of all this up and down. I mean, you never really know what it's going to be like, and we're always, you know, reacting out of desire or fear, aversion, confusion, and we need to be able to hold it in a place of awareness and stillness. So it's just all of the things that we experience, these worldly dhammas. And when we say worldly dhammas, isn't out there, it's in here. How do we experience that? Allowing for those experience to arise, but not be shaken by it, not get caught up, not be hooked. And that's where we find our stillness. And it isn't as if it's still in the sense that nothing's happening, everything's completely safe and secure, it's exactly what I want. It's still in the sense that one's able to not be shaken. So that's where our refuge is. And learning how to find that place of unshakable deliverance. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening.